Since I didn't grow up in Wisconsin, I didn't fully understand the beauty of a bratwurst when I was younger. For a long time, I preferred a hot dog to a brat whenever given the choice. That is, until I eventually lived in Wisconsin. Now that I've been in Hudson for 12 years, I've come to appreciate being able to buy delicious brats made right here in town at RJ's Meats. Unlike me, Rick Reams had a great appreciation for meat at a young age, even making his own jerky by the time he was 11. It turns out, the meat business was in his lineage, and it's something he'd eventually pass on to his own children as well. Rick and his wife Ann have owned RJ's Meats for over 35 years, and the store has grown as Hudson has grown. On this week's episode of St. Croix Stories, Rick shares more about his lifelong love of meat, his passion for providing the best product to customers, and shares the scoop on the store's meat vending machine that made headlines around the globe. All of that and more in my conversation with Rick Reams of RJ's Meats. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of St. Croix Stories. My name is Tyler Mason. Happy to have you with us today. Talking to the co-owner of RJ's Meats. If you have ever been in Hudson, you probably know of RJ's, and he's the namesake of the establishment. We'll talk about that and get into a lot of good stuff here with Rick Reams, as I said, co-owner of RJ's Meats. Rick, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Well, let's start out kind of your intro and your background a little bit, I guess. Where did you grow up? And then also, how long have you lived here in Hudson?
I guess I can say I grew up in Hudson. I was born in Ohio, and my dad took a job in Southern California. And when I was 11, we moved to Hudson.
Okay. So you've lived here, like you said, growing up here, basically.
Yeah.
What do you remember about just growing up as a kid here? Being when you moved here, what was it like? And I'm sure it's changed a lot since then.
Oh, it's changed drastically since then. But as I was talking with my wife this morning, one memory stands out, and that is we moved to town on November 7th.
Okay.
And we were coming across the old blue bridge across the St. Croix River. These are two new ones now, but when we came across the river from Minnesota, I had seen snow maybe once or twice in my life prior to that sure. could remember. And the flakes, to me, were as big as softballs. And it was just awesome.
Yeah. Well, you've had a journey to RJ's Meats now, and we'll get to a little bit of that background in a little bit. But take me to, I guess, kind of the early days of the beginning of RJ's, which from what I was reading, it was previously called Jim's Meats. How did you first get started there? Because I know you worked there before you owned it.
Right. Yes, I was. My parents shopped there from the time that we moved to town.
Okay.
And because they were told that's where you go to get good meat.
Sure.
And I remember we were over in the cities doing, my dad was a handyman around the house, and he was picking up some stuff at it was like a Lowe's. I can't remember the name of the store, but my mom said, you know, the meat market is looking for somebody to wait the counter because they had approached my mom to see if she was interested. And she says, they always have high school kids there. And I was absolutely terrified of the idea that I would stand behind that meat case and help people with meat. I mean, I've always loved meat.
Sure.
And I applied, and I didn't get the job because I could barely see over the top of the meat case.
They didn't have a stool for you or anything?
No. And actually, a next-door neighbor got it, and it wasn't for him. And after a couple months, he came over to my house one night, and he said, hey, tomorrow I'm going to put my notice in up at Jim's. So the job will be open. Huh. You should go apply again. And the nice gal, Lois Holcomb was her name, worked behind the counter. She was all over the owner and manager that they needed to hire me. She thought I was a good kid. So that was nice. And So that was the beginning of the journey.
Sure. And tell me what the store was like back then. I'm guessing quite a bit different maybe than it is now.
To an extent. I mean, the store was the same size, but what we use now for our production area was the meat market.
Okay.
And where the meat counter and everything sits there, it was actually a full-grown little mini-mart. It was a Tom Thumb Superette.
Okay.
And so there was he had a manager there, and I mean, I couldn't believe the business that they did. And there's the little doorway that goes to the back into the meat department now.
Sure.
That was actually an adjoining door to go into the Jim's Meats.
Okay.
And a door that's not completely blocked off, but it's blacked out now, was the front door to the store. Huh. So what used to be the retail area, which was 1,200, well, the whole meat department was 1,200 square feet.
Okay.
And so about 800 of that, I guess, was the retail area. And that's all now our processing yeah. for.
So I mentioned the RJ's is the namesake. It eventually changed from Jim's Meats to RJ's Meats. You said you got that nickname in the Air Force, which you spent some time there, found your way back to Hudson. Eventually took over Jim's in 1987. What was your plan at that point when you did take over the store?
To have a job. That was I got back from the Air Force in 86, and the job market was pretty tight. But I went in the Air Force to see the world because I'd worked for Jim from 77 to 82. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to go see the world and see what it's about.
Sure.
And as I was in the Air Force, I was stationed in Idaho.
Okay.
And guys would come to me to have their wild game cut that they would, you know, we were right off the Sawtooth Range.
So oh, sure.
I cut a lot of elk and a lot of mule deer out there for guys. And I thought, you know, I really like this.
Yeah.
And I was going to transfer, if I was in fuels, was my main job. And I was going to transfer when I could into working at the base commissary to be a meat cutter.
Okay.
But I was going to lose some rank. So I said, no. And it worked out that the manager and the gentleman that had replaced me when I went in the Air Force had both went to work at Anderson Windows within a month of me coming home. And so walked in the front door and Jim threw an apron at me and he said, you can start tomorrow. And it was a Friday night. And I said, no, I'll start Monday.
That's pretty good. So that was back in 1987, correct? When you took over the store?
Correct.
Okay. So what you said that your plan was just to have a job, but I'm sure you probably had kind of longer term goals maybe for the store. Or what did you kind of think the store could be? Or did you really want to put much change to it initially?
Well, I was pretty nervous. I knew that I enjoyed cutting meat and I liked everything about meat. I mean, when I was a little kid, my hobby was making beef jerky. And literally, it was to have a job. We were closing on a house and I needed to have an income. And I thought, well, my goal was to go to school at River Falls, get a degree, and then go find a town in Wisconsin that needed a meat market. And
sure.
So when this opportunity came up, it was just fine. And I changed the name from Jim's because a couple of things that Jim said that always stuck with me was he would not sell me the business. So I actually bought the inventory and his assets there. Huh. And the reason was he knew I was a guy full of ideas and he was afraid that I would drag the name through the mud. He didn't think that I would, but he was nervous about that. So he said, you can't call it Jim's. You got to call it something else. And that stuck with me. And I signed a 5-year lease and I was 26 at the time. And
wow.
5 years to me then was an eternity.
Yeah.
I really had no clue. It was just to continue to operate as Jim had operated it.
Sure. And what was that like coming back home too? I mean, you, like you said, you kind of went and saw the world in the Air Force. Did you have plans to live back in the Hudson area?
My wife is from Roberts.
Okay.
And all of my family, plus my oldest brother, lived in town.
Okay.
And I really liked Hudson. I really loved Wisconsin. So it was a kind of a no-brainer.
Sure.
It was a home base when I got out and we just stuck here.
Yeah. Well, I know the town has changed quite a bit over time too. How did the store, or how has the store, maybe even since you took over, adapted to the growing population? And with that, I assume a growing demand for some of the products too.
It has. And when I purchased the store, it was strictly fresh meats.
Okay.
So we cut quarters of beef and we would bring pork in and cut it, but we didn't smoke anything. So all the bacon, all the hams we brought in. And one thing I learned from Jim was that he always wanted to have the best possible quality out there for the customers that he could. And so that's one of the things that I tried to stick with. And to that end, in the early 90s, there was the big cholesterol scare.
Mm.
And everybody was shying away from meat. I remember I went up to dinner at my parents' house with some of their friends one night, and we had burgers. But my dad had put he bought like 2 pounds of ground beef, and he probably put 3 to 4 pounds of like oat bran or whatever in with it. And it was just like, oh, this is absolutely awful. And so, but we were struggling because people were extending their meat. And so we started smoking our own products to create a little niche market for ourselves.
And what was the reception to that when you guys started doing some of those smoked meats?
It was unreal.
Huh.
It was
in a good way?
Very good way.
Okay.
It was the county market had a smokehouse and a great guy running that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more for downtown had a smokehouse and they had a big program there. And I had some people telling me, there's already two places making smoked meats in town. What makes you think you can do it? I'm like, well, I'm going to do it the way that I've done the meats that Jim taught me is the best quality, the best availability.
Yeah.
And those first products, they were great at the time. Today, I look back on what I put out and I'm kind of ashamed of them.
They might not make the cut in the store today.
Never. Recipes have, but techniques have changed and everything is much better now.
How much, I mean, I guess how big of that process now is that for you guys, the smoking part of the meats, and what is the process like for that these days?
Well, that drives all the work at the store. I mean, when I bought it, there were 4 or 5 employees. Today, we've got about 26 employees. Wow. And our sausage has kind of driven the demand along with the fresh meats. Mm-hmm. And they kind of came along with it. I mean, it's not cheap. And I always try to figure out how to get this across to folks that, yes, I'm price conscious, but first I'm quality conscious of what we're going to put out there.
Sure. That makes sense. And is quite a bit of it local food, local, I assume, or as much as you can?
As probably? Much as we can. Yeah. You know, our chicken, we just switched in the last month to a processing facility that's owned by the farmer. So a co-op, if you will.
Sure.
It's air chilled. The animals, the birds that they grow are not as big as a lot of the other ones. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the biggest difference is the chicken breasts, where you could get like almost a spaghetti texture in the breast. You get the long filaments there that were just not very appetizing. Mm-hmm. We haven't run into that with any of these. And so that's the type of stuff we look for. Our pork is from southern Minnesota, and it's a Compart Duroc. And we had some last night, and I thought, this is every bit as tender as a New York strip. And
so, wow. How often are you kind of out meeting with farmers, and that? How much of that is part of the job for, you know, what you do?
Well, I don't meet directly with the farmers.
Okay.
And part of that is because of the volume that we do, there's not really many in the area that could handle that. Plus, we don't harvest. And trying to find a place that could harvest and get them to us, and we don't deal in quarters anymore.
Sure, sure. Makes sense. Well, anyone who's been into the store has seen the awards on the wall. There's all the plaques from any number of competitions that you guys have won over the years. Tell me a little bit about the competition scene, I guess. You know, how many have you entered, do you know, or which ones do you typically do? And what does that mean to you to have the success that you've had at some of these?
Well, the very first one was 1993, and it was the Wisconsin Association of Meat Processors. And I go to that convention every year. In fact, that's going to be next weekend down in Madison.
Okay.
And it's compromised of there's about 130 members, and they're all family-run markets. Hmm. Some smaller than RJ's, some 10 times the size that we are, but all have that commitment to quality. And it's almost like a family reunion. There's a competition, but it's a camaraderie there too.
Yeah.
And so we entered that because I thought, I had a lot of people saying, well, you know, I go up to Louis and I get this and I get this. And Louis has, over the years, has become a great friend and a competitor of sorts, but not. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get an award so I could say, hey, look, I won an award too, just like Louis. And I still remember that first one was a third place, which is champion on our ring bologna.
Okay. So, and then I think I've seen some maybe international things that you guys do, Germany and places like that. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. And so there's every 3 years they have the IFFA, it's called, IFFA, and it is the largest international trade association for meat in the world. Hmm. And they have it usually the second week in May every 3 years, and they have a quality competition along with that. And 2013 was the first time that I sent products over to Germany, had to overnight them, spent a lot of money, more than I ever thought that I would for shipping something along with the products.
Yeah.
And when I arrived in Germany 2 weeks later, they said, customs has detained your products. Oh, they won't allow them into the EU. And prior to that, guys would literally pack it in their suitcases and smuggle it into the country. Huh. They're not selling it. It's just there for evaluation.
Right.
So then in 2016, the German butchers contacted our American Association of Meat Processors and said, hey, we would like to send judges to the U.S. and evaluate these products, the same standards we use in Germany, the same judges there.
Yeah.
And because they knew that we could no longer compete over there.
Sure.
And so that's what's happened every 3 years since. And my mind has been blown because in those 2016, 2019, and 2022, we've managed 95 gold medals.
Wow.
And a gold medal is a perfect score.
That's awesome.
For that product. Yeah. And it just blows my mind that we're at that level.
Yeah. Which, when you do these competitions, do you typically, when you have 95, I'm sure it's a lot of the different products, but are there others, you know, there's some that maybe are the top performers or ones that you like to enter every year. What's kind of your selection process for which ones you choose to enter?
We like to enter ones like in that one that we think that the, because, you know, we always think of the German butchers as very traditional, and mm-hmm. they are. I mean, there is a Bratwurst law that almost exceeds the beer purity law.
Hmm.
It goes back to like the 1300s or something. I'm not sure. But, and so it's more traditional flavored stuff. But in 2022, we just said, you know what, we'll throw caution to the wind. We entered 48 items and 47 won gold medals. And
wow.
The biggest shock to me was our breakfast brat, which is a bratwurst that we formulated for the Knights of Columbus years ago to get into the county fair. But it's okay. Got a regular brat mix in it, along with scrambled eggs, hash browns, ham, cheese. One is a maple flavor base, and the one we entered is a Western. So everything you'd find in a Western omelet is inside that casing.
Wow.
And I entered that in there, and I thought, this will blow their minds. I don't think it's going to do anything, but let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, it was out at Penn State that year, and we were gone from there. We didn't get to see it. I delivered products and then left.
Mm-hmm.
But friends that were seasoning suppliers were working in the assisting the judges. And one of my friends came to me and said, that Western breakfast brat, Rick, they just absolutely loved it. And the next morning at the hotel for breakfast, they all ordered Western omelets.
That's awesome.
So that's one of the fun stories.
That's cool. I've not had the breakfast brat, but I didn't have a big breakfast today, so I'm hungry just kind of talking about it. I love the jalapeno cheddar brats, and just the traditionals are great too. But is that one you guys have often at the store?
That's a limited release.
It is,
so
okay.
The Knights of Columbus, we make it for them during the county fair.
Sure.
And so we'll make extra, and we sell it then. And they used to sell it at the Hot Air Fair.
Oh, okay.
But they don't participate in that any longer, but we still make it for that week of the Hot Air Fair.
Okay.
And we actually put limits on how many a person can buy so that everybody can get some. It's a really labor-intense sausage, and so that's why we said we'll do it two times a year, and that's enough.
I'm going to have to mark my calendar and,
yeah.
When Hot Air Fair comes around, or the county fair, and get one of those. That sounds pretty good. Now, RJ's has been a family business for you. I know your wife and your sons and even some nieces and nephews have worked there over the years. What has that meant to you to have this as not just family owned, but family operated as well?
You know, it's a pretty awesome feeling. I mean, when I grew up, my dad he didn't hammer it into us, but he showed by example that family is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my biggest cheerleader in getting everything going there. And so, as you said, I mean, my wife, all three of my sons, I've got four siblings.
Okay.
Three of them have worked at some point in time there for us. Gosh. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm terrible with numbers. I've only had one niece that hasn't worked at this store. So it's been huge.
Yeah.
And my oldest son and my youngest son currently are there with us, and this is their game plan for their life. And it's just such satisfaction to be able to see my children grow and work at the store, and their love for the industry that is so near and dear to me.
Yeah, that's very cool. And kind of keeping in keeping a local theme here. I know partnering with the local community has been a big thing for you, whether it's selling products at your store, like, you know, candy from Kenoki's, or having your meat used at restaurants in town. We were talking before we started that you provided Windsor Stuba with their meat for a long time. We had Black Rooster Bistro on the podcast previously. They mentioned meeting with you before, and I'm sure there's other places in town that maybe we don't even know of. But what do you enjoy about that aspect of the local businesses supporting each other and kind of just helping each other out?
Well, it's huge because Hudson's always been a bedroom community in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people will head over there because that's where they work and they see this. And let's be honest, there's a lot to offer over there. So anything we can do to promote Hudson, we love being able to do that, along with the fact, you know, we all complain about the property tax that we pay here.
Yeah.
And all those businesses pay a huge amount of property tax too.
Sure.
And so we need to keep that part alive, but more it's a camaraderie between the businesses. And I just want to see everybody else in town succeed because it just draws more people to town and helps all of us.
Does it seem like that's kind of increased over the years, that sense of, you know, lifting each other up, or has that always kind of been the case since you've had the store?
No, it hasn't always been the case. Yeah. And it's changed drastically, I would say, in the last and I'm terrible at times, but 2-3 years.
Sure.
And somebody you had on here before, I mean, Chad Trainer is the hugest cheerleader for Hudson and all the businesses. And it is so cool to see that. It's really neat.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I wanted to ask about the vending machine that you introduced in 2017 that made some local headlines in some of the newspapers and everything. I thought it was awesome when I first saw it. What was it? Tell me about the idea behind that and maybe the reception to it back when you guys first unveiled that.
So an interesting thing about that, I actually saw that at the trade show in Germany in 2013 when I was there. And they weren't ready to sell in the United States yet. And I was back in 2016 with my wife and we were walking through. I mean, it's, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of square meters. It takes up like 5 buildings and a couple floors on each. So anyway, we went through there. We saw them. I stopped the waited in line to talk to the gentleman because they're all over in Europe.
It's popular there. Yeah.
Very popular. And because they're still closed, like in Germany, butcher shops and retail is closed on Sundays. So this was their runaround where they could have it. So I've got a friend in Bavaria that has one, and he was telling me the business they do is phenomenal. Well, I asked the gentleman at the booth, are you guys available in the United States yet? And he said, well, we're looking into it. Where are you? And I said, well, I'm in a small town in Wisconsin. And he took a step back and he said, really? Well, I graduated from UW.
Oh, wow. Small
and
world.
That's what I thought. And I said, well, there's a lot of campuses. You know, there's Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Stevens Point, Eau Claire. Which campus did you graduate from? And he said, oh, none of those. I went to UW River Falls.
Sure enough. Yeah.
And he says, what town are you in? I said, I'm in Hudson. And of course, another big revelation. So he decided that we were going to be the first vending machine for their company in the United States.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And when it took us almost a year to get everything taken care of to get it here. And he told me, oh, the news will like this. And you said we made local media. Well, they ran that. WCCO came out while we were setting it up, and they did we rushed through to get stuff in there so they could do their video of it. And they ran it on Memorial Day weekend on that Sunday. I don't know what time it ran.
Okay.
But on Memorial Day, my cousins from Ohio called me and said, hey, we just saw you on the news.
Oh, really?
And our social media just exploded with messages from around the globe. Wow. Where did you get this thing? My friend in Bavaria sent me a message. He said, I was at a trade show and I saw you on the television.
That's awesome. We had it international then. Yeah.
It went international and it's just been crazy and we still get calls about it.
That's cool. Very cool. I didn't know. I knew, like you said, the Twin Cities TV and newspapers had articles and stories about it. I didn't know it was national and international. So that's awesome. I'm curious, what's something about RJ's that maybe people of Hudson might not know, even though it's been in the staple of the community here for so long?
You know, this is a tough one, and I've been thinking about it. And what people in the community don't know about RJ's is something that I didn't know about it until 12, 15 years ago.
Okay.
And that is I got to count back, but I believe it's my four-great-grandfather was a Bavarian grocer. And he had two sons who immigrated to the United States, and they settled in Ohio. And in our hometown, at the turn of the 20th century, if you wanted the best lard in Ohio, you went to Marysville, my hometown, and you went to Osmond's Meat Palace. And that was their surname was Osmond. And so as we looked at it, it's like it's kind of funny how, you know, I've been attracted to meat my whole life. Yeah. And it really is like in my genes because – I have, you know, ancestors and a lot of relatives.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, Osmond's meat market in my hometown closed 5 years before I started working at the meat market for Jim.
Okay. So it goes back in your family history and you're carrying it on with your kids too. So it's just going to maybe keep going for generations.
It's a curse. Yeah. But there's worse ones.
I was going to say, that's not a bad curse to have. A couple questions left for you here, Rick. I'm curious if you have a favorite item from the store that you eat personally. I know you mentioned the pork that you just had the other night, but is there a favorite kind of go-to if you're just trying to figure out what to get that you fall back on?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, you know, what's your favorite sausage? It's like, how do I tell you who my favorite child is? Because all the recipes and everything mean a lot to me. But if I'm going to have, if my wife and I are in the mood for beef, we'll have a New York strip or we'll have a hamburger. We had our pork chops growing up. My kids didn't like pork chops that so much, so that's a treat for us. And of all the different flavors of bratwurst that we do, the old standby traditional, nothing added, just a plain Jane brat is still my favorite.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the New York strips are one of my go-tos there. I mentioned the brats that I like to get, and I've tried some of the other brats too, and they're all good, but now I want that breakfast one that we talked about earlier. So that's cool. Well, last question here, Rick, and it sounds like you listened to some of these before, so you know what's coming, but I'm curious, as someone who, you know, grew up here, moved here when you're young, grew up here, has now been a business owner here for 35 plus years. What is your favorite thing about Hudson?
You know, this was the toughest one because I knew you were going to ask it. So I was thinking, what would it be? What would it be? And yeah, it's like, I can't take the cop out and say the people, you know, I mean, people, yes. I mean, I've known so many that have shopped at the store over the decades. It's been awesome. Mm-hmm. But as I told you earlier today, you know, it was snowing out there. And when we moved to town on November 7th of 72, we came across the old blue bridge on I-94 across mm-hmm. the river. And coming from Southern California, we moved there when I was 4, so I don't have many memories of snow in Ohio.
Okay.
But we came across that bridge, and the snowflakes were coming down big as softballs. And I was just totally enamored with that. And I thought about it, and it's, you know, it's the natural beauty in Hudson. It's the river. It's the trees in the spring. I can't think of what type of tree they are. Taco John's has them, and Phillips Menesize has them on their lot. They're like a flowering crab apple or something like that. And it's just beautiful in early May. You know, I love the fall colors. I love seeing the snow. There's just so much here. You know, we've got beautiful farm fields and the woods and the state park. And so I just love the area.
Yeah, it is hard to choose. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Rick, thank you so much for taking time today to be on the podcast. Thanks for, you know, being such a staple of the community for so many years. I know I'm at RJ's quite often and buying a bunch of different stuff. So appreciate that. And yeah, thanks again for taking the time and sharing your story.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been an honor and a privilege to serve Hudson all these years. I'm very blessed with everyone. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And thanks to everybody for tuning in to this week's episode of St. Croix Stories with Rick Reams, the co-owner of RJ's Meats. Be sure to subscribe to St. Croix Stories wherever you listen to podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at stcroixstories.com. Share it with your friends and your neighbors and help spread the word about what's going on here in our local community. Until next time, hope everyone has a great day.